Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Shelby, I just love you so much. I can't go without you. If you leave for work, I'm going to kill myself.
That's your best impression. Usually, well, you really try in these moments.
She's a really good actress, and I am. And I, despite my impressions, I'm not actually that limits. Good. So I'm like, yeah, unfortunately. Okay, well, that just sounded like you were about to go to the bathroom. So.
No, it did not. Oh my God. Can you imagine?
We, this week, are discussing the horror film Obsession. Remember when we used to not cover horror films on the podcast? I feel very...
I'm picky about my horror films, but we've covered a few.
I know. Well, I feel like you've gotten better at watching horror films. You've figured out how to...
Horror movies have gotten better.
Okay. Okay.
I think they've crossed over into a more elevated, trying to say something sort of...
Well, yes.
Experience.
Elevated, you know? Horror.
Yeah.
That's what they call it.
That's what they call it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like Curry... Barker,
Curry Barker, yes.
Curry that Barker.
Writer and director writer and of director. Obsession.
I like Curry Barker was inspired when I saw Hereditary when I was 17 years old.
Oh.
Just kidding. He's so young. It's absolutely mind-boggling to me.
He's currently 26, yes.
It's like... It gives me shivers because obviously this movie did supremely well with critics, but just the fact that it got made, he was like, he's known for his like TikTok comedy. Again, we have another TikToker, another social media film bro in the house. He and his buddy make these like sketch comedy clips. And I never saw a single one. I'm not on straight man TikTok, but Rob got them and he's like, oh yeah, that's how I recognized him. Sent me a few clips. Okay, sure. It's giving Juliet like Malk and all of those early YouTube sketches from my childhood. Okay. But this man was born in 1999. And so he has zero film credits to him, his name. But then he made a viral micro budget YouTube horror film that caught the interest of the powers that be. And they said, you know what? We want to make that into a feature. And he said, actually, I have a script I've been working on after I saw an episode of The Simpsons. So let me do this instead. And thus Obsession was born, which premiered at what was it?
It premiered at TIFF
last year.
I did not see it there, but it premiered there.
Premiered at TIFF. Great word of mouth. Immediately in a bidding war to whatever. What's it called? Own it? I don't know.
Yes. Yes. The buy the rights.
Yeah, buy the rights. And thus got its theatrical debut this last week. And yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, we've had a couple of these now because Sorry Baby, that was also a TikToker making a film. Next week, or maybe in 2 weeks, Backrooms is coming out, which I think was directed by someone who was 17 at the time. So we'll see if that's any good or not. But yeah, I mean, I do think while we bemoan TikTok and some of these platforms and how they're rotting our brain and nobody wants to watch a full-length movie and nobody wants to read a book, et cetera, et cetera. Like, all those negative things can be true. I do think that TikTok and YouTube and social media have democratized filmmaking in a lot of ways. Just that previously it was hard to make even like a student film, you know, like those cost a lot of money. You had to have a camera, you had to have film, you had to have light, you had to have all these things, where now it's like everybody has a phone. You can go out, you can film on your phone. It's not that difficult. Like, you can make shorts, you can make a feature if you want to. Mm-hmm. Their feature film, the found footage one, Milk and Cereal, which came out in 2024, like, had a budget of $800. and basically it was just like him doing all of the work with like his friends.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like there are interesting avenues now that exist that I don't think existed, you know, 10 For years sure. ago, 20 years ago. So sometimes that is fun. And also, he has another movie that's already filmed that's coming out next year with Aaron Paul and your favorite, Bryce Dallas Howard.
I know. So, it's kind of like, ugh. Sorry.
I mean, we shall see if that one is good. I feel like it's rare that someone has three movies that are a hit in a row, even if the first one was filmed in your backyard with only like found footage.
But I saw an interview with him where he was like, I was 17 and I realized like horror could be like elevated, you know, like I saw Get Out and I was like, oh my gosh. And that's honestly what's been funny about this movie is I think the movie's really smart. I think it's really, there's a lot to talk about, which we will. But the thing that honestly cringes me out is seeing the director interviewed, because I'm like, oh my god, I feel like such a boomer. I feel so old looking at him. He's just so young. And it's like, there's a, I don't know what it is, a defense mechanism in my brain that's just like, oh, this sweet little baby, just, oh, he can't even articulate a full sentence.
There is something very weird about aging. I mean, aging itself is strange. Like, obviously, people have been talking about that for a million years. But I think that when you are when you're like growing up and you're a teenager or you're a college student or you're a 20 something, like, it does feel the world has endless possibilities. Like, you could sort of do anything. You know, if you're a college, if you're 21, you're like, you know, like, I'm probably not going to be an Olympian, but like, I maybe could be if could I wanted be? To, you know, it's like, I could be a fashion designer. I could be this, that, or the other. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I feel like you are in this realm of opportunity. And it kind of feels like everybody who is young is sort of put in that same capacity. But I do think that there is a point after you turn 30, which, you know, both of you and I are at now, where you start realizing, like, wait a second, I'm actually not in the young person group anymore. Yeah. Like, there are people who are, you know, have worked several years in a job after college who are 10 years younger than me.
Yeah.
Like, in the grand scheme of things, are we old? No. Like, we're most likely, knock on wood, we're not even halfway through our lives.
But
at the same time, it is like, oh, here's this guy who's 26 who has made a film. And obviously, you don't just make a film. Like, he's been working on this for however much time. And it's slightly unnerving to think, like, oh, and that's he utilized his time and where he is. And how have I utilized time?
I'm not
and
projecting.
Where am I?
No. I'm not projecting my insecurity.
Are you having a seizure, Shelby? Like, what's going on? Your wiring is crossed.
It's like, I hadn't heard of this movie until it was in theaters. Okay. Obviously you had been exposed to it having done the, you know, film festival circuit. Mm-hmm. But I think this is one that really benefited from word of mouth, obviously, since it was a Blumhouse production. There was a lot of marketing to it, and so obviously that paid off too. But I do think that this has benefited from a huge like word of mouth campaign. Because it is so excellent. It premiered on Rotten Tomatoes with like 100% certified fresh. And then everyone who's seen it is just like, yeah, you've got to see this. And the audiences, I mean, it's just like it's that perfect kind of horror where it works for everyone. Like me as someone who doesn't like super creepy, demonic, like evil, like I don't want to see Hokum, right? Which is the other horror that came out this year that everyone's like, oh, bone chilling, so good. And I'm also, it's like, but it's also funny. And this is like built from somebody with a comedy brain. So there's a lot of humor and anxiety intertwined.
I actually feel like you might like Hokum.
I don't think so.
Hokum
is too like, creepy. It's too like, ugh.
It's like, it is, isn't in the same way. And there's this, and the thing with Hokum is that Adam Scott is playing this like novelist.
The worst person, yeah.
Who is like the worst person in the world. Yeah. And it is so funny to watch him like engage with these people. Because he's like a, you know, like a J.K. Rowling, Stephen King type person. So there's always these fans coming up to him being like, oh my gosh, like I love your book. And he is so nasty to them. At one point, one of like the bellhops in the hotel, he puts a spoon on like over a candle while the man is telling him how much he loves the books he's written. And then like burns the back of his hand and is like, this is what it feels like if you're talking to me. Like, I hate it. Like, get away from me.
Yeah. I think Hokum, I don't like Adam Scott and I witches. So there you go. So there you go.
That's most of the movie, unfortunately. Adam Scott and witches. I will.
Yeah. Whereas, so it's like watching, like, I couldn't stomach Hereditary, but I loved Midsommar. You know, it's that sort of thing.
It's really a Fanny Dooley situation.
Yeah.
Shelby likes cookies, but doesn't like cake. Yeah. What is that?
Yeah, exactly. But once I read the spoilers for this, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, because I like a horror that kind of hates men, you know.
I like
a little, ooh, men really are the worst sort of through line in my nightmare fuel.
I did and this get really to the end off. Of this and was like, oh, this is like Shelby's gonna love
this. This is
like,
mine.
This ending is very upset with these alley. Well, because I guess let's get into the premise of the movie.
Please.
So the movie's obsession, it's about a boy named Bear, which this
classic,
not to derail us instantly, he goes by Bear the whole movie. So so I just thought his name was Bear. But then at one point he's wearing a name tag at the store he works at that says Baron. And I was like, is Bear short for Baron? Like, is that a common thing that like, you would go by Bear if your name is Baron? I was like, this is
maybe
such a weird do we think that Baron like Trump Baron, goes by
like,
Bear?
Oh yeah, I don't know. I thought it was just like a clever like,
well, because there are man people the bear. Just named Bear. Like, that is a name. I swear that there's some celebrity who has a kid named Bear.
Bear's like a very trendy name.
Anyways, Bear is like 20-something, lives in a small town, is in this friend group with
a small town with a very robust record / music store.
Yes, of course, as all small towns do.
Yeah, four people on staff at all times. But yeah, he works with his best friend / former high school mates as well.
Yes.
At this record store.
And he's in love with this girl named Nikki, who's his high school friend. A tale as old as time of the, like, friend who wants the hot girl to like him.
Yeah.
He's kind of shy and awkward.
Yeah.
She's, like, very gregarious and fun. And so one night after, or he goes into like a novelty store, another fun thing that that the small town has operating, and buys a One Wish Willow, which is a stick that you can break and make a wish off of, sort of thinking it's like a novelty toy. So he is driving Nikki home one night and Nikki's like, do you like me? And he panics and says no. And then after she leaves the car, he's like, why am I so stupid? I said I should have told her that I liked her. I'm going to break this wish and wish that she loved me more than anyone else in the world. I mean, isn't that basically what happens?
I mean, it's less like, oh, it's more like, no, it's fine. Just continue.
Anyways,
we'll get into it.
Anyways, he makes the wish. He makes the wish that she would love him more than anybody else. Obviously, because this is a horror movie, that wish becomes true. She becomes obsessed with him. And while that sort of, like, initially, it's weird the entire time, but initially he's kind of going with it because he's excited that, you know, it's like they're hooking up, they're making out all the time, she wants to spend all her time with him, great. It quickly derails into her doing weird things, her not being able to leave him alone, her not wanting him to talk to other people, like, just insane jealousy, as all Wish movies end up derailing into. Maybe this isn't what you should have wished for. And so most of the plot, most of the time of the movie is sort of spent in this phase where she's getting continually more creepy. He's like trying to back away from this, but is still stuck in this situation where she's obsessed with him. And so then he decides, okay, well, maybe I can call and cancel the wish. Maybe I can get another wish unwish it.
Like, no.
Is that not what he's doing?
A crucial part of this, and the whole way you're framing this is making me very interested in your general take of the movie, but when he calls the number, he literally says, I don't want to cancel my wish. I just want her to be normal.
Yes, initially.
He wants to keep her as his girlfriend, but just wants her to stop cooking his cat.
Well, yes, that is true.
So this is important because there's like the crazy girlfriend trope at play, and it's like on paper, that's the horror. But like the real horror is this guy who does not care about the cost of his wish, except that it impacts him personally.
Yes. Well, yes, because then when it gets to the end of the movie, like, he has several opportunities to do the right thing and mm-hmm. instead does the selfish thing, which, I mean, he's done the whole time, but, like, over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And the beauty of the movie is how that sort of, like,
that
selfishness comes back to bite him in the end.
Yeah.
Which is what makes it sort of a delicious final scene. Yes. But we will get into those spoilers, I guess, in a bit.
Yeah, because there were two things I liked about the initial setup is that one, the One Wish Willow isn't like a cursed object per se. Like there's very quickly established that like, yeah, this works. Like the person in the store is like, yeah, whatever. Some people complain, but most people don't. He gets on Reddit at one point or the fake version of Reddit on the, you know, low budget film side of things.
Yes.
And people are like, oh yeah, it works for me. Like no problem, no question. At some point, he goes back to the store and freaks out. And he's like, well, whatever. There's no take backs, but like some people have a happy wish. And so I like the idea that if he had wished something well, it wouldn't have always turned out to be like a careful what you wish for sort of morality tale.
Right.
But it's like because this little boy used his wish in the way he did, it becomes this nightmare for him. And so that premise was good.
Because there's the two main characters, but then there's two other friends who are in the movie, Ian and Sarah.
Yeah.
And it later in the movie, Ian gets his wish and he wishes like $3 billion and all of a sudden money starts falling from the sky. So it's like, that's great. Like,
That's what you do.
I'm not really seeing a downside to that wish necessarily.
Yeah. Well, he completely shifts the entire worth of the US dollar if you think about it. But
I guess that's true. But like, who's to know?
Who's counting? Yeah. He just needs to pay for groceries and not invest in anything too serious. But no. So that idea was that made it a little more fun, and also you didn't have to go on this journey of like the mythical origins of One Wish Willow. It really was just a vehicle for this.
I have a One Wish Willow in my apartment. They sent me one.
Oh my gosh. What are you going to wish for?
I'm not going to wish for anything. I'm going to let it sit there. I'm like, I don't want to die.
You're like, I don't want to play with this. Yeah. Well, are you like the bear or are you a good guy?
I mean, I have watched enough movies and TV shows and stuff. I feel like to know how to wish correctly.
Right.
You know? The thing that people get wrong about making wishes is that they go too big. You have to sort of narrow it down. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't think you can really wish for a... you need to wish for something that's like pretty concrete. Yeah. Because if you wish for something that's sort
can't
of
can't be
more,
up for interpretation.
Yes, yeah. Nebulous, then it can go wrong. Like, yeah. Like wishing for him to be, or wishing for her to be his girlfriend, like, was never going to be a good idea. As they say in Aladdin, one of the rules
I was
rules
thinking of that
is
too.
That you can't wish for someone to fall
literally
in love with
you. Yeah. That might have, like, been before Curry Barker's time.
I guess.
Come out. No, just kidding.
It's like, you can't wish for more wishes, and you can't wish for someone to fall in love with you. But, like, he can wish for, he could have wished for money.
He could have wished for the fucking courage to go and tell her the truth. Like, right. Jesus.
And that's the other part. You know, I don't
know. That's the other part of the premise I liked, is that it very quickly, to me, established that he was the bad guy. Like, obviously, people can have crushes, unrequited love. Everyone's been in a position where they're like, oh, I wish he liked me back. Like, I get it. I get it. And I have sympathy for that feeling. But the way they set it up is that this guy has had this 10-year crush on this girl and hasn't said anything about it. Okay, fine. You're a little scared. Whatever. I get it. Oh, putting yourself out there is so hard. But he's also, in the first scene, he's confessing his love to what turns out to be their waitress, because he's, like, practicing what it would be like. And the waitress, oh, cute girl, is like, oh, yeah, that's sweet. Like, it's, you know, it tells a lot. Like, yeah, maybe bring a gift. Like, you might as well do the big swing. But his friend, Ian, is like, ew, no, so cringe. That's so embarrassing. And immediately it becomes about the performance of confessing love instead of telling the truth. And these guys are like, blah, 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 blah. You got time. Don't do it. Blah, blah, blah. And so it's like, this guy is just wallowing in his own self-pity as the, like, incel poster boy of the trademark nice guy persona.
Yes.
Of, like, I'm a good guy. I'm a friend. I've been friend-zoned, but it's not fair. Like, why don't they ever like the good guy? And it's like, well, first of all, you've never given her a chance. Like, you've never told her how you feel, because you're just sitting there, like, googly-eyed at her. And also, it's made explicitly pretty clear throughout their interactions you have of them enjoying this night out that she does not view him romantically, that there is not interest there. And instead of, like, processing that, he remains insistent that, like, once he is brave enough to confess his feelings, they must be reciprocated, because obviously he deserves her love because he's such a nice guy.
I mean, as someone who is prone to a crush, I do understand the, the thing, and I think also the thing about relationships and liking someone is that it runs so counterintuitive to any other aspect of your life, in that, like, if you want to do something, usually you can, like, work harder. You can, you know, try harder. There's ways to make something happen. The thing about love is that it's, like, completely sort of, like, random and kismet, and there's sort of nothing you can do. Like, you can be super into the person. That person's not into you. That person can be super into a person can be super into you. You're not into them. It has, like, really nothing to do with sort of, like, how hot you are, even though sometimes that factors in, or, like, there's so many different aspects to it. And so I get the like, I am so desperately in love with this person. The person clearly likes me to some degree because we are friends, but why aren't they in love with me? And I think, you know, deep down that it's like, oh, this just isn't going to work. But there's a certain, like workhorse quality to it of, like, well, if I keep trying, if I keep showing up, if I keep whatever. And I know this because, like, I have been on both ends of this situation where it's like, you have the friend who's in love with you and you're like, I do not like you. Like, I don't know how many more ways I can try to show you this or, like, give this to you without just, like, outrightly being like, why are you being weird about this? I do not like you. I just want to be your friend. But then at the same time, I've been the person who's like, oh, no, like, maybe I'll be. So it's like, I related to his character a lot in certain ways. But I do think, yes, this, like, it sets up pretty quickly, if you are at all a savvy person, that we are talking about sort of like an incel-ish quality. Yeah. Yes, he's like more attractive probably than your average like incel.
Yeah.
And he does seem sort of like sweet and shy, but deep down he feels, because he is a straight white man, that he like deserves this because he's nice to her and because he's put in time, he deserves that she would like him.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not how relationships work.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, straight white men have been told over and over and over again that they basically deserve whatever they want if they, you know, are like try hard, or, you know, are nice about it, or, you know, or just they can take it.
Yeah.
And so you get to watch that play out once he realizes like, oh, wait, I have the power to do whatever I want now. So maybe I deserve this after all.
Yeah. And the way he reacts to the wish coming true kind of highlights the problems with his character, like I mean, his moral standing, because like, yeah, on paper in the first, you know, chunk of the movie, you're like, oh, he's just shy. But then once he's aware that he's stripped her of her autonomy, he's not disturbed by himself, by his choices. He's disturbed that she makes it awkward for him to be in a relationship with her. And so it's like, he's happy to, you know, there's a rape scene in that he's having sex with her while she's literally out of her body, like not at all present. And that's, I'm pretty sure, after he has like a 99% recognition that this is not consensual in the traditional sense, that this is just a trick of a wish. And so, and then at one point she literally begs him to kill her, and he's like, would it really be that awful to love me?
Yes. Once that scene comes up, because like she's weird, because there's a certain part of it where it's like, what is going on here? Because she's acting strange and like, obviously the wish has come true, but like, what are the mechanics of this? Like what's going to happen? And then there's a scene where like, she's, like the wish part of her who that's obsessed with him is like asleep. And the real part of her from before is awake and is like, please, like I'm trapped in this body that you have created out of this wish, like kill me. Because also at one point he calls the helpline for the One Wish Willow, and they're like, oh, sorry, we can't do anything about this. The only way that this wish will end is if either you die or she dies.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so when she's wishing for him to kill her, it's like, okay, well, he could do that, but he doesn't want to do that because he doesn't want to, he's too selfish to kill her and put her out of her misery. Then later on, he thinks about killing himself, but he's too selfish to do that as well. So it's like, he's such a selfish person that he can't get out of this. He can't do the right thing. He can't do like the right, correct thing, or he can't even do the like less selfish of the two bad ideas.
Yeah. And that's why I respect the director / writer, because I think that there's a side of the audience that just thinks this is funny and that the obsession and the horror comes from Nikki acting like the crazy girlfriend trope, you know, possessive, jealous, freaky Nikki. But he's like,
that's what's set up in the trailer. So
Well, yeah. And but he's like, in multiple interviews, been like, no, like the scary thing is this idea of this man wishing for love he hasn't earned, and like, what does that, what happens there? And so, I mean, to me, it's like the obsession is actually, he's obsessed with her, but then doesn't actually know or like the real her, because he's more than happy to have the quirky Nikki, freaky Nikki light version of her, as long as it like serves him. And it's not like, and then the fact that there's the other girl, the other friend, who does like him, and once he's been driven mad by like freaky Nikki, he's like, oh yeah, Sarah's kind of cool. And it's like, Sarah, she's been here the whole time, but you've been blinded by your own obsession with Nikki. that you haven't been able to like really examine like what you're actually attracted to and what you want, and like building real relationships because you're just stuck in the own figments of your imagination. And so I felt like that was really interesting and tragic and kind of comic too, in this like sad white boy who's flip-flopping in his interests.
And also the fact that we learn later that Nikki has also been hooking up with his friend.
Oh, yeah.
Who has not been telling him this.
So because, messed up.
Yeah, it's like, this is the problem of the, like, small town friend group, where you just have such limited options for things that everything starts to overlap. And you're like, yeah, like, you're in this weird friend group where it's like two people are hooking up, but the other people don't, like, it's like a very bizarre love triangle, or love square, I guess, that has really no outlet or way to be done correctly.
Messed up. Yeah. No. And that's also where it's like, I think there's like a version of me that would be like, I don't know, do we need a man to tell the story about the crazy girlfriend? But I do admire his picking apart of male relationships and this idea of like the male loneliness epidemic being basically self-inflicted, where Ian and Bear are supposedly like best friends, confess each other everything, but then actually Ian has this big secret and he can't listen to Bear when Bear's covered in blood begging for help. And they're just like so self-interested and kind of emotionally disconnected from each other and from others' lives that it's like a useless friendship in the end.
The male loneliness epidemic is a fascinating thing. I mean, because yes, it's mostly based in like this weird toxic masculinity and competition that boys are set up at from a very young age of like, they can't show their emotions. They have to be in competition with one another. And so they're isolated and really, but then it's straight relationships are so weird to me. And because I'm not involved in that, you know, like, or I guess I shouldn't say straight relationships. Straight men are so strange to me because I don't interact with them very often. And when I do, there's like such a stilted quality to them because I feel like they don't really know how to interact with, like they know how to interact with other straight men in a very like superficial, like we're going to talk about these same four things, or we're sort of just going to say our opinions on sports next to each other. And then they have these weird relationships with straight women who I do know very well. And I'm like, how, like, what is the emotional connection like here where you have this woman who's like a very like emotional, in-tuned, interesting human being. And then this man who like cannot communicate with anybody. Yeah. And then this pair is put together. And so the only person who, and it's almost like the woman is tasked with like, archaeological digging out the like any sort of personality or interest of this man, and he can only show that to her. And so they have this weird relationship where it's like the only way that he can express any feelings is to this one woman who has selected to accept these feelings from. It's so strange. And like obviously you and Rob are very different because Rob is not toxic in that way. And Rob is one of the, you know, and I have like several girlfriends who have like good husbands like that.
Yeah,
who,
yeah.
You know, can operate. Yeah. But like in this relationship, in this movie, it's like he can't express these things to anybody, really. Yeah. And so he's so isolated, and he's like, the only way that I could ever possibly express my feelings is if this one woman who I am obsessed with allows me to express them to her as sort of like an empty vessel for my life's worth of feelings.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are we doing that somehow this is the concept that we have set up for society? I'm like, I'm glad that women are finally like, you know what? No, actually, I'm not doing this. Like, you guys can be lonely or sort of sort this out among yourself. Yeah. Like male loneliness, you talk about your feelings. Once you figure that out, like, we'll be over here waiting.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy fix. Like, the solution is in its name. It's like, okay, don't be lonely. Figure it out. Learn how to have relationships, how to win friends and influence people. But no, like, I have a lot of sympathy for how the patriarchy has impacted both men and women. And like, even like watching the new version of Lord of the Flies, I think, which is directed by the same director of Adolescence, which is another story about
It was good. Okay.
Yeah. And just sort of like humanizing the fact that there's a social component to how men are behaving, and not saying women are responsible to solve it, but calling it out and trying to name it. And I think there's like, you know, power in that. And I think this movie plays with it in an interesting way too, where so much of the tension is on Bear not wanting to be embarrassed. Like the interactions with Nikki at the beginning, when she first abruptly, or is like, when she's like, do you like me? And he can't say it because he's worried he'll be embarrassed. Or like when he's practicing with Ian and Ian's like, you can't say that, it'll be so embarrassing. And there's sort of this policing of never ever wanting to be embarrassed or cringy. Like Ian doesn't want them to come to the party because of how it will look to his other friends. And yes, there is some concern for Nikki in that, where it's like, it looks like you're abusing her in a moment of weakness, bro. But it's not actually like, are you abusing her in a moment of weakness, bro? It's more like, I don't want that vibe at my party. Mm-hmm. I don't want people talking about that. And so it's all about like the selfish lens of like, how am I being perceived? And there's not really a willingness to do the work of like, well, what am I feeling? What do I think? And how do I take care of that? Except the other woman, poor Sarah, who's like, I need to talk to you about this because this is freaking me out. And like, what can we do to fix it? And she's the one who gets annihilated for it. In a gruesome, gruesome way.
Horrifying. Perhaps the best scene of the movie, which apparently was longer originally. And that he trimmed it so they could get an R rating rather than an NC-17.
Disgusting.
Which I'm just like, ugh.
Honestly, I read spoilers and I covered my eyes through a lot of it. And then I was like, it has to be done. And I opened them just as another, you know, final squelch came through. And it's just like disgusting. No,
that's the type of kill that I'm like, disgusting. Oh, I love it when they do this in horror films.
Disgusting.
That was an incredible moment. I also did love the moment where he realizes that he's eating the cat. That was disgusting in like a sort of way.
I love when he like is practicing like, okay, Nikki, we don't cook the cat like in the car. It's like, sir, you have bigger problems than this. She's literally shat herself here. Like, please.
Yeah, like
unhinged.
I was trying to think of like, okay, if I was in this situation, not if I had wished this on the person, but like, how would I try to like extricate myself?
Yeah, what's from the this? Solution? Yeah.
And and I do think it is like you just have to kill her.
You're like, oops, sorry.
Like, I mean, I think if
you don't kill yourself.
Well, like if he made the wish, so I think he really like it was like he should have killed himself. But I was like, if this was like if you're in this situation where this person is like obsessed with you to this degree, and like there's and like you know the wish isn't working, it's like you just gotta put him out of misery, because you already
stripped her of her body autonomy. You might as well just finish the deal.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like if you've gone 80% of the way, you might as well go the full 100 because nobody wants this current situation. This did remind me a lot of Passengers. Did you think about that movie while you were watching this?
Oh yeah. The Chris Pratt.
The Chris Pratt, Jennifer Lawrence one where he like basically
he does
like signs her death warrant because he doesn't want to be lonely in the spaceship.
Yes, literally.
Yeah,
I did think about that. Because it's like that movie was supposed to be horror, and you can see kind of a hint of what the reverse of it could have been, where this person projected so much onto someone who didn't have a choice in the matter. And then as they realize, like, I don't have a choice in the matter, how does that horror play out? But
Passengers was like the man version of it.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was like, but in the end, she loved me anyways. And she thanked me for doing it.
Because I'm such a good guy.
In this, it was like, oh, no, you have done a horrible thing and we hate you forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also wonder, like, in a world where he took the time to cultivate a relationship with her after the wish, would she have been so unhinged. Because, like, yes, I think so. I think it was built to fail. But he doesn't really give the relationship a chance once she's proven to be too cuckoo bananas for him. You know, like, he's pretty anxious throughout. But there's a moment when he realizes for sure that she, like, Ian calls to say, to, like, point out an inconsistency, and he realizes, like, she lied. And then he goes and sits down with her and is like, do you love me more than anyone in the entire world? Which is how he phrased the wish. And so that's sort of like confirmation for him that this is a wish. But he instantly after that starts like wanting out of this relationship instead of like being like, okay, I got what I wanted. Like, how do I build a real connection with this with this freaky Nikki? Like, he doesn't even try. He's just overwhelmed by her supposed love for him.
I mean, it's a classic situation like regretting classic. What you wished for.
Yeah.
Because he's not, it's like, if he's not going to like match her freak.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what theoretically, like, I guess he could do.
That's a solution, is move to the woods with her and just.
And just
be blissful alone together.
I mean, I think the problem with, like, this wish is that no matter what he does, at some point she's going to become jealous and is going to, you know, kill a restaurant worker or somebody who, like, looks at him a weird way.
Yeah.
But, yes, like, he does not, even in the beginning, you're not really giving him the benefit of the doubt of how he handled this. I want to talk about the ending, but first I want to talk about the actors in this.
Oh, yeah.
Because I felt like, especially the two leads both did an incredible job of acting their way through some pretty like wacky, bizarre swings. And I had never heard of or seen either of these people.
Yeah.
The boy is played by Michael Johnston, who I guess is in Teen Wolf, which I did not watch. He's a little older. He's 30. Yeah. Had you seen him before in anything? No. Did you know him?
No.
And then the girl, Indy Navarette, is, she's basically only been in 13 Reasons Why and Superman and Lois, a TV show on the CW that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
But she was,
fantastic. So yeah. I mean, it was like, it was so bone chilling. Like, I thought of Invisible Man, that Elizabeth Moss horror that everyone was surprised by, like how good it was. But even like this movie left me more unsettled. And it was because of her performance. Like, she was so good at the layers of, one, playing like straight, real, cool girl Nikki. And then two, playing freaky Nikki, the possessed version of her. And then three, there were a few moments where she would break out of the like trance and be freaked out by what was happening. Like clearly not consenting to, usually it was when she was kissing Bear, she would like wake up and be like, what the fuck? And like pull back. And there was real like terror in her eyes. And so all these layers were like separate versions of her. And you could immediately like pick up on which one we were getting. And I thought that was so mesmerizing and just like so effective in like amping up the the terror, because you never knew when she would snap, and so every instant with her on screen was just like a nightmare of like waiting of what was gonna happen.
And there was like the unadulterated freaky version of her, but then there was also the freaky version of her trying to present as normal, which was also fun to watch. The performance that it reminded me most of was Florence Pugh in Midsommar, which isn't, you know, that was sort of like the movie that put her on the map, that people were like, wow, like this is an actress to watch. And I did wonder if in 5 years, Indy Navarette is going to be one of those people who everyone's like, oh, like one of the greatest actors of our generation. Because she sort of has the face of like a, like CW star. I mean, I guess is why she was on Superman and Lois. Like, she has the look of someone who could be on like Riverdale or like like in a bad horror movie.
Yeah.
But clearly she's much more talented than that.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see where she goes and how directors utilize her, because it does feel like that there's a lot of potential.
Yeah, because this movie doesn't work if it's like a bad actress. Like it will just come off more goofy and kind of laughable. Whereas here it was like really scary. Like it was unnerving. Like when she's like in the corner of the bedroom behind the vase of flowers, you're like, oh, like it's like, yeah, it's not like a headless figure in the corner in Hereditary or like a, you know, flaming demon. But she's able to like take these really just like jerky sort of like laughable moments, or like the tension of the party when she goes from reading her Hansel and Gretel incest fanfic to suddenly being, you know, self-harming in a really gruesome way. Like it was mesmerizing to watch. And I think he benefited from her performance because I don't necessarily feel like it felt like he was just reacting to whatever she was doing because that was his role. But she made it easy because anyone acting opposite that would be like, WTF, like, what's going on? What are you doing?
He had such like an interior performance, like, because he's such like a shy person. Like,
yeah,
I think it would be so easy to have a performance that's like bigger than it needed to be. And he, I think, did a good job of like keeping it really like small, like even in his sort of terror of her as it went on. Okay, is there anything else you want to discuss before we talk about the ending?
Well, I did think it's interesting that Ian, the actor, is Curry Barker's like creative partner.
Oh, yes.
So he's the fellow like comedy guy, the TikTok, you know, guy. And I'm curious, like I have a bookmark on them to see like how long that lasts. Because I think of like overcompensating and that creative duo. And then they broke up, right? Like they were a romantic relationship. Am I remembering this right?
Well, like the like Benito Skinner and his boyfriend?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. He was like involved in the
But they were dating.
They were dating. Like, now they broke up, and I'm just like curious.
Curry Barker?
No. Okay. I'm not saying they're dating, but I'm like, I always am fascinated by these creative partnerships where one is like behind the scenes and the other's front camera, and like how that will play out, and like, will Ian be in his next movie, or like, well, you know, like what's the give and take does, there?
It does look like he is second build the next one. And then also there is a Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, he's rebooting it.
I'm like, let me see if there's a cast list available for that yet. It's a bidding war for the future rights, blah, blah, blah. Taylor Sheridan, Jordan Peele. On April 21st, 2026, it was announced that Curry Barker is set to write and direct the planned untitled 10th film with A24. So I guess that's all that we know. We don't know if he'll be in it. I think that the like straight guy partnerships when it comes to filmmaking tend to do better than the like romantic duos. Just because at this point the Coen brothers like sort of aren't directing any more together, or like they're like making separate projects.
Yeah.
Or like Key and Peele. But like some of these people, like Martin Scorsese's like team of people like has been the same for like 40 years. Like it's the same people who he's making things over and over with.
Yeah.
I also kind of wonder if it might work better if like it is the director versus the actor, because they're not having the same job. I kind of think if you're like two directors, then you.
But
might
if you're not a good
one.
Actor, it's like. Oof.
Do we think he's a good actor or not? He was kind of
like
just
like
dorky in this.
Yeah, I feel like. I don't see it for him, but maybe.
But maybe he'll like, if he truly has just been like friends with this guy and they're like making movies together, maybe he hasn't really gone to any acting classes or anything and will be better.
Yeah.
Because if like you were like, oh, we're going to make a movie the next time you're in LA, I think I could deliver like an okay performance, but I'm sure that if I like went to school, it would be better.
You'd get, for sure. Beautifully put. But yeah, speaking of Ian, the ending, poor Ian.
So the ending, Yeah, Bear's trying to get out of it. He meets up with Sarah. Then Nikki kills Sarah by smashing her head over and over and over and over and over and over again into a steering wheel. But then,
a brick that she put on the steering wheel.
Yes. Face, like, head completely, like a gory puddle. But Bear goes back to the store and gets a. gets more of the One Wish Willows, which are apparently back in stock. They were out of stock. Now they're back in stock. Yeah. I'm kind of like, if these are selling well, like in this town, wouldn't there be more weird things going on?
Well, they make a point that most of them are collectors. Right. Most of them don't open them. It's like you and yours. They're just to have on the shelf.
Like me and mine. And maybe it will work someday. So he gets a couple and he goes to Ian and is like, hey, like I can't, because he realizes he can't snap a second one. Like you can only use the wish once, thus the One Wish Willow. So he goes to Ian and is like, hey, and like he's covered in blood. He's like, I need your help, like fixing this. Can you wish something, whatever? And Ian's like, this doesn't work. I'm going to wish for $1 billion.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden money starts falling from the ceiling. And it's like, okay, well, that plan clearly didn't work. Now he has a wish and he's like, well, maybe I can get Nikki to wish, like somehow we can make her wish the thing that can fix it or whatever. Yeah. So he goes back to the house where she is and then Ian shows up. She shoots him in the head.
Well, and she's like scalped Sarah's corpse and is and drew tattoos all over her so that she would look like Sarah, thinking that's what.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
That's what Bear wanted.
Disgusting. I forgot about that.
Disturbing.
So gross.
Yeah.
Then Ian shows up. Nikki shoots Ian in the head in like a really funny bit.
Ian like showing up, like it works. Like, duh, sir. He was with you. He saw it raining billions of dollars. I feel like your lead question should be, oh man, he was freaking out about Nikki. Like, how can we help? I should probably think this through. But no.
So then we get to the ending, the like last scene, which is like a beautiful sort of Romeo and Juliet-esque like puzzle that's put together. So let me see if I get this correct.
Yeah.
So Bear goes into the bathroom and is like, maybe I should kill myself.
Yeah.
And
he's
so
gonna
shoot
himself.
Yeah. So he's going to shoot himself, but then he decides he's gonna swallow all of the Oxycontin, which were the pills that killed the cat initially. Yeah. So he's like, he knows they work. So he swallows all these pills. Then he's like, nope, never mind. Yeah. I actually don't want to die. Tries to start throwing them up. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that, Nikki has found the other willow and you hear the snap. And then immediately Bear like rights himself. And you realize that Nikki must have wished for Bear to be in love with her. Which like, that's maybe the sort of like freakiest freak ending that we could have gotten, where the two of them are just like crazy obsessed with each other living in the woods. So he goes back out and is like in love with her, but then because he has taken this Oxycontin and hasn't thrown it up, he dies. Him dying breaks his wish.
First.
So he dies. Dies, and then she is so devastated that he dies that she is about to kill herself. But then, because of the wish rules, his dying ends her wish, and so she like wakes up out of a trance, like surrounded by all of these dead bodies with the gun, and like freaks out.
Yeah, that's brutal. It's really sad because I always jump to like, well, what's going to happen? And it's like, she's going to prison, you know, for murdering her three friends. And that's
sad. 1,000%.
And that's too bad. That really sucks. Really sucks.
Although, theoretically, I mean, I guess we'd have to look at this stuff. Like, there is a version where she could blame all of it on Bear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because his fingerprints are on the gun.
Yeah.
He could, and he's like, swallowed all these pills, which she like presumably couldn't make him do.
Yeah.
So like it could have been a murder suicide-y kind of thing that he had going on. But her DNA may be all over.
Maybe all over Sarah. Yeah.
So
oops. No, it was upsetting. It was a but brutal the ending bit of is like end.
One final time. Oh yeah. Yes, this guy is terrible. Mm-hmm. And then we ultimately do get her as the final girl at the end.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
she has survived.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, good riddance to Bear. And I'm so sorry for your trauma to Nikki. And yeah, you know what? There's all those witnesses at the party that might be able to speak to how Bear was inducing a psychosis within Nikki. So maybe there's help for her.
I guess the real question is, theoretically, in this world where it is so easy to prove that the One Wish Willow works because so many people have it, like, is the One Wish Willow admissible in court? And what are the laws around that?
Yeah.
Because she could say, oh, I, like, yes, I killed these people, but it was under the influence of a One Wish Willow that my boyfriend forced me under. Like, I think that's what we
provocative
actually have to get
sequel. Yeah.
Involved the... in is like, and who
One
is
Wish
making
Willow
these?
The
like,
United States.
Right. Because One Wish Willow also, like, they're not expensive. It's not like this company's making a lot of money off of this. Like, what is going on? But but at the same time, it is still a business that is active because they have a helpline that you can call. It's not like, oh, this old artifact.
I do think
from,
it's
like,
some sort of magical
time.
You know, it's like one of those, oh, if you dug in too deep, they wouldn't actually have, like, a, you know, tax ID. You know, it's like,
but it's kind of like the substance.
They just show up
in that, like, it is a business that is running.
That's
it's
true.
Not,
that's
it's
true.
Not
There's
a,
it's a collectible, so it's been around a while,
right?
Okay.
So therefore, you would think that there would be laws somewhere that had to do with this. Maybe Bear, because he lives in this small, sort of quaint town, has not encountered those,
right?
But
it'll like, be like when, Ready or Not Two. It'll be, there's actually a machine behind this, and they're going to be mad at how it played out with Nikki so
right.
publicly.
Oh, here comes Sarah Michelle Gellar to die in the most bland way possible.
You know, he, Curry Barker did say he could envision this as a sort of anthology series where it explored One Wish per episode and how it kind of went awry, which Jordan Peele also did sort of in an anthology. He tried to do The Twilight Zone, didn't he?
Yes,
he came back
he
with
did
that for a while.
To do The Twilight Zone. Yeah. I think I would, I don't know if this is a hot take or not. I was thinking about this earlier today because Emmy season just like, or not just wrapped up, but the Emmy eligibility window ends at the end of May.
Mm.
And I was like, usually I feel like there's all of these weird prestige-y shows that have come out.
Mm.
And I was like, did they come out? And I just wasn't paying attention or like, what happened here? And I was looking at Gold Derby at the likely winners for different things. And it felt like the only two, like, yes, there's like Abbott Elementary, Only Murders, like a couple of those shows that have been running for a long time. But the only shows that were really like in the zeitgeist this year are Hacks and The Pit. I'm like,
what about Heated Rivalry?
Well, I guess,
was that
Heated Rivalry
year?
Also.
Was that last?
But no, that's not eligible for Emmys because it's a Canadian
Yes.
So like the next season, season two, theoretically, they'll figure out how to make that work. But like, yeah, so that's not eligible. But I'm like, really? There's so little like TV.
Lord of the Flies.
That's interesting now. Yes, like Lord of the Flies came out, but like, are a lot of people watching that? Like, are people talking about it? I don't like, I miss the days where I would look at the Emmy lineup and be like, oh, these are all, you know, these are all shows that people are watching, that people are talking about, that have like some sort of cultural cachet.
Yeah.
And now it feels like, who's watching The Diplomat?
But
like,
you don't watch TV.
No, but what I'm saying is I think people, there are people who watch a lot of TV, but it's like, there's so much TV that even if you're watching a lot of it, you're not watching things that other people are watching.
Right.
I think the one exception to that is reality TV. That's like the one type of show that it seems like that there's like large audiences for that are watching it like regularly together.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
But so going back to what, if this should be an anthology show, it's like, I don't want another TV show. I don't want a One Wish Willow anthology show. That sounds boring.
Yeah.
I do think that if he wanted to do sequels, like Obsession 2, and it's a different person discovers the One Wish Willow and uses it in a different way, I think that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Sort of like, I think they had discussed doing like Talk to Me sequels in the same way, because, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you shake the hand and it's like a different person is coming into your body. So there's lots of different ways that could go. But
I love a standalone.
We don't need a sequel.
Yeah. I think this works because I think it was smart, and I think that there aren't your usual gaping plot holes, but I think if you try to iron out some sort of mythology around this, then it takes out the fun. And this really wasn't a vehicle of what if your girlfriend goes crazy? It was he had something to say about the expectation of deserving love just because you want it, and he said it, and I thought that was good and done, and it doesn't need a spinoff or a sequel. Thank you.
Right. Yes.
Thank you very much.
I think I also think if we're doing sequels, they should be done like The Devil Wears Prada 2, where it was the woman who wrote the first one had come to the director several times with different ideas over the years, and they said, no. And then she had the idea for this one that was about the state of journalism. And they were oh, that's a great idea. Let's take that to Meryl. And so then they made a movie based on the idea rather than what usually happens, which is the studio is I want to make The Devil Wears Prada 2. Let's find a writer who will write us A Devil Wears Prada 2. And it's well, then you just have to come up with an idea for it, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm interested to see what he does. I think the directing of this was really interesting. His use of I don't know, the frame ratio or whatever people were dissecting, and he shoots it with the people in the center of the frame instead of to the side because it makes it more ominous. And there's a lot of shadow work, especially with once Nikki is possessed and sort of how that adds to, there was a lot stylistically that I found engaging and exciting, and the needle drops. There was a lot he was doing that felt fresh and new and a distinct style. And that's always fun. Even if watching him be interviewed is kind of painful to me personally, I'm excited to see where he goes with
his long,
long
wish
life.
Willow 2 should be about someone like you who's desperate for youth. And
it's not even that people. Though. I'm not like,
and it's like, I want to be young resenting. Forever.
That's literally the plot
and then it's
of the
picture
substance.
Of Dorian Gray. Oh my gosh. Well, there you go. Wow.
Yeah.
And you have long hair, sort of like Demi Moore.
Yeah. Yeah. And really toned arms. Well,
okay. I actually don't want to get into that.
I know. I can't. I'd rather talk about how toxic men are, please.
Final question. Okay. If currently today you got a one wish Willow and got a wish, what would your wish be?
I don't think I could say it on air, you know? Let's say it's a Luigi Mangione vibe.
Oh, okay.
I'd clean up house. You know what I mean? No, you know what? An ethical way.
I would like to wish for the death of. Yeah, oh, and here's a laundry page list I've got.
An ethical way. Let's say I want all of the billionaires' funds and assets to be divided equally among all of their employees, or maybe, you know what, maybe I'd have to think about it. Something about the division of wealth.
I do think that, yes,
and the breaking of
all the money that is currently owned by billionaires to be legally siphoned from their accounts and reallocated evenly among all other people in the world, so that everybody, you know, gets, I don't even know how much.
Yeah. Or maybe it'd be like Inception, and I'd choose one of those parent companies like P&G, and I'd be like, they need to sell off every single company under their umbrella to individual democratized ownerships. You know what I mean?
I think the problem though with choosing something like that is sort of you know how I feel like in New York, they're always coming up with new laws that are supposed to help with the real estate situation. Mm-hmm. And then inevitably the evil people just figure out ways to sort of circumnavigate them.
Well, that's why my first wish, I think, is more powerful.
Well, right. So yeah, so it's kind of, but I also think like, even if you gave a list of like, okay, here's like 800 terrible people, like I want them all dead. Like there's other bad people who would take those spots. Like, I don't think that would actually
solve. It
would
feel really good for a problem. Little though.
Oh yes, it would. But just as with Bear in this, you know, the feeling feeling. I think you're thinking too big. I think that if you get a wish, you have to wish small. And that's the key. To it.
Okay, I would wish for an end to fossil fuels. Let it fall how it may.
See, again, I think
it fall how it may.
You can't be wishing for those kinds of things.
I would though. So don't give me your one wish, Willow.
Okay, so I'm not giving you my one wish, Willow, because you're about to wreak havoc. Like, have you?
Be like, I'm return sure the planet this, to the animals. Like,
well, I'm like the. Like the whole plot of the there's a Stephen King book about like the JFK assassination, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, if JFK hadn't been assassinated, then, you know, all of these like bad things maybe wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And instead they like, you know, I mean, it obviously it's a novel, but like you go back in time and fix it, and then it turns out things are worse.
Yeah.
And I'm like that is how you get into those kind of situations. Yeah. You're like, no fossil fuel, and
but
then
we're
it's like,
already
oh,
like
we're
so
having, like,
far gone that it's like
humans as sled
well
dogs or
try.
Whatever.
Yeah. You know, the system is broken.
What you should do instead is like a Mackenzie Scott situation where it's like, oh, like I'm wishing for like large sums of money, like for myself to be.
No, because I'm not perfect. I'm not, I don't think it should be in the hands of one. I don't believe in ethical billionaires. So,
well,
I, you know what? I could wish for. A stop on global warming. I could wish for.
Oh yeah.
At least we'll take away the existential threat of an uninhabitable planet for human beings. I could do that.
I think that's good. Yeah.
So that at least allows for these deviants to not screw us over permanently.
Maybe get rid of all nuclear technology.
Interesting. That's another existential threat. I think global warming is more important, though. Because, you know, nuclear power might be our future for clean energy. So.
Supposedly.
So I'd rather keep that on the table.
Okay. Well, just, interesting. You know, ultimately, I think that if you're going to give one of us a one wish, Willow, it probably should not be Shelby.
I think you.
Drunk with power already.
Yeah, I would wish for more one wish, Willow. Have they thought about that?
I would wish that everyone was in love with me more than everybody else.
Yeah, that'd be great. I would wish for GLP-1s to be evaporated.
I would wish for the ability to fly. I'm like, I want to be able to fly around. It looks so fun, like a little bird.
Yeah, that's true. You'd probably be shot down from some airspace when they're freaked out by a human's ability to fly, like a foreign object. You'd be like the drone seen over, the parachute seen over California or whatever it was. Everyone
I'm like,
thought.
The amount of UFOs that aren't shut down, there's probably already people who are flying.
Maybe teleport. Teleporting would be cool.
Of the ability to apparate, then you could rob banks.
Oh yeah, that's true. You could rob
like
Elon Musk. Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be some fun power. Okay.
How did you catch Jumper and Jumper? I'm like, I can't remember that.
I don't remember. Clothesline or something.
Good old what's his name? What's that actor's name from Star Wars? I hate
Hayden Christensen. Yeah.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Well, we went a lot longer on this episode than I thought we were going to.
It's a man-hating movie, Matt. You should.
Well, yeah. But the plot is pretty simple.
But there's
and
layers.
For a movie starring people that we've never heard of, we certainly spent a lot of time. But yes, thank you everyone for listening to this episode. We will be back next week. Are we doing Mandalorian and Grogu?
Oh my god. Talk about it.
Because that is what's coming out next week.
Yeah.
Also,
we'll see.
I love boosters, which I am.
Oh, okay.
Which is great. You'll like I love boosters.
Okay, yeah.
But will people see that. I love boosters? Unclear.
Very, I don't want to see Grogu. It's so. I've heard only bad things.
I haven't heard anything about it. Well, so
okay, yeah.
And that in and of itself.
Neutral to bad. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyways, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye.